Yo, yo, yo. Welcome to another episode of That's Dope. My name's Godzilla. We got Josh, and we have a special guest that we've had 5 years ago. We got the nice guy, Prince Ryan Johnson. Thank you for coming through.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, you know, this was, I wanted to hit you up, like, in happy times. You know, something huge just happened for the community, for Final Fantasy, of course. But first, before we get into that, I really want to say rest in peace to Kiri Toriyama. As of last night, he passed away at 68. He just inspired, like, so much of our works, you know, like, you know, shit, I wouldn't be in the anime industry if it wasn't for, like, what he made. You know, video games have been impacted by what he's done. Hell, even, like, the last time that we talked 5 years ago, I was wearing a Dragon Ball Z shirt. So,
yeah,
yeah, I just really wanted to say that first because, you know, like, now as we're recording, like, just everybody is just top of mind. But I had to say something.
It's sad, of course, but it's like he really was like the godfather of this shit. And I'm not saying that to be like on some weird pleasantry shit. I mean,
that's the truth.
Realistically, when Funimation was founded, like the reason they got picked up is because they acquired Dragon Ball.
Yeah, it was the first title.
Here.
Yeah,
that was like the only thing they had. They were like, yo, we got Dragon Ball. And then America was like, okay, we're greenlighting this shit. And then Funimation started. And it was like Dragon Ball was the beginning, and then from there everything else. It's like the only reason we have anime in the capacity we do currently,
yeah, in the West especially,
is because of Dragon Ball. Yeah, we had things in like VHS stores. If you were like one of those guys, you could find like Ninja Scrolls maybe. But it's like the thing that put anime on, yeah, and made it to where it was like we were all like watching Toonami and shit. I mean, respectfully, Funimation, and because of Dragon Ball, yeah, they existed.
I personally agree. Like, you know, like of course Akira was like the first like big anime thing that showed the world like what it could be, but it was Dragon Ball, you know, especially like for us. I was just talking to a friend who's in Holland, and he told me that Dragon Ball Z was also like they had like a similar experience with Dragon Ball Z being like the main title that they had as anime, you know, around the world. But I just had to say that because, you know, rest in peace. Like this is a huge thing, especially for like the nerd community, I would say. But man,
I mean, when I was a kid, I used to draw like my own Dragon Ball OCs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I draw like my own Saiyans and stuff, man. It's true, but like, you know, honestly, like it's insane, like just how cross-cultural Dragon Ball is, and I don't even just mean like, you know, across the entire world. I mean, even like in sub niches, right? Like, you know, if you're a gym bro, you love Dragon Ball, you cannot go to a gym in 2024 and not see someone wearing Dragon Ball merch. And the reason they're there is because they saw Goku training growing up.
Exactly.
And that's profound. People are taking care of their health.
Yeah.
Because of that, right?
I was like, working out last night. I was working out last night when the news broke. And, you know, it was like with Dragon Ball Z mentality, you know, just like, I just want to get stronger, you know, like I want to get better.
Right.
I think, yeah, anime culture, nerd culture, like, it really inspired us to be healthier, like, bigger, better versions of ourselves. You know, rest in peace. Like, well, like, what? I'm more sad because it's like he had more to offer the world. You know, like, I don't really get sad, like, when old people usually, like, I mean, I usually get like, dang, that sucks. But, you know, they had, like, such a great impact. I guess I'm sad because it's like he had more in the tank, you know, like more to offer the world, and it sort of is cut short before being able to make those things happen.
Yeah. And it's also really tragic to me that they were saying that he basically died of a hematoma. So it sounds like he hit his head on something. And there was head trauma, and it caused internal bleeding, which led to his death. Which to me is just even more tragic because, you know, this wasn't like disease or something that couldn't have been prevented.
Yeah.
It was just like an accident. It was probably an accident that happened. And unfortunately, because it seems like he was still healthy. He had a ton of projects, they said, in development up until this happened. So,
man, like that's. Yeah, for real. I mean, I was reading the manga. I was enjoying it. I was actually excited for Daima. You know, like, I have enjoyed more Dragon Ball products than not. You know, like, I love the sub. I love the dub. I love the music. You know, I was excited for baby Dragon Ball.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really wonder what this means for the series, because like the series wasn't really over. He did take the helm, didn't he? Didn't take it back for Super.
Yeah, yeah. Like he came back into it.
And yet the other guy go back to illustrating essentially.
Yeah. So it definitely is going to be a pause for it, and you know, I think they'll figure that out. You know, it's like, yeah. I mean, just around the world, like we're seeing like just like the industry just sort of take this as a day, you know, like this is a tragic day for sure. So it makes a lot of sense that they're gonna have to think about like what to do. Like the Godfather, who was still in charge, you know maybe like not like on top like he was before, but he's still like making things happen, and now he's suddenly gone. So they'll have to figure that out, and you know. Yeah. But either way, I'm glad. If anything, I'm really happy that like we got to grow up in that era also, you know. It's like like, I mean, I'm just happy to be a millennial, honestly, at this point. Like, whereas, like, if we had, like, a really good time growing up, and it's you know, I hope the kids get to enjoy that shit. You know, honestly, that's what I think. Yeah. Also, speaking of going into different, happier topics, especially the reason that we want to bring you on, Final Fantasy.
Yes.
You know, yes. Growing up at the same time, like, I'm happy I got to grow up with Final Fantasy VII also.
Yeah.
What was your first way into a Final Fantasy again? Like, you told us last time, but it's also been a minute.
Oh, man. So, I don't think I've, like, really, like, told the full story, like... Ooh. To too many people, because it's kind of absurd. But I mean, back when I was a kid, like my friends, they'd have Final Fantasy VII on PlayStation. I didn't have it, so I pirated the PC version when I was a kid. Oh my god, never let Square hear that. But yeah, I like when I was a kid, I was like, yeah, I got to grab the PC version. Because I didn't get I got the PS1 version later, actually. So I got like my physical PS1 version later, but right. Yeah.
What year was this?
Oh my gosh, dude. I was like maybe 10 or 11 years old, actually.
Wow. Like 2000. Like,
and I was chronically online, and I was on dial up. So it actually took like a very long time for it to download.
That's a good question. I'm glad you said that. Yeah, because I was thinking I was like, what time period? Like, I was thinking like maybe like 2006, but I was like, this is 2000.
I was really young, and I was honestly too young to even like to have like really have been knowing how to do that type of stuff. But I figured it out.
Man.
And I was like the first generation of chronically online people.
Back in my day.
Right? Yeah, it started with me. It really did. to the point of where people would always ask me, like, and as a teenager, like on like AOL Instant Messenger, they'd be like, every time I log on, you're always online. I'm like, yeah, because I live here. welcome to, you know, my world. And so yeah, that was how I really got started with Final Fantasy. Of course, I'll tell everyone, you know, I recommend you go and purchase games legally now. But I was a broke kid.
Yeah.
And that was how I got into it at first, and thankfully I can afford games now. And from there I played, you know, 8 and 10, and I really loved it. But I guess what like really attracted me to Final Fantasy and was the characters, the design of all the characters. I looked at Cloud and I thought he was like the coolest character like ever. And like I didn't know anything else about him, but I saw the CG render, you know, the iconic one where he's facing Midgar, and then I saw the other one where he's on like he's on his motorcycle and he's got a sword, and I was just like, I don't know what this is.
I was about to say, like, was it like the blocky versions, or was it like the full versions? Because funny enough, the blocky Barrett was what got me.
Really? Like the chibi like field model.
Yes. I think he's cool.
I know. So actually, I like, and this is like a sin to even say now, but like I wasn't like the hugest fan of the blocky models. Actually, I like the battle full size models more.
That's fair.
I thought they looked more. Yeah, I thought they looked more anime. And
you're
hardcore.
Not wrong. Like, I think I'm weird for really liking the blocky versions, but like I think that's what got me. Like where like I saw them just do their thing, and I was like, that's cool. And then I saw Barrett talking, and I was like, oh,
yeah,
he's so cool.
Yeah. So I just thought that it was the coolest game ever. The PC port was super wonky because you had to use like the numpad in order to control it.
Oh wow.
Yeah, like it was
I guess because they had the arrows on them, right?
Yeah, and it was the controls were really jank, and I'm pretty sure you couldn't actually control them.
No.
And yeah. So, yeah, I'm
surprised you became an influencer for Final Fantasy after this. Like this.
Yeah, sense. I know. I know. Ten-year-old boy doing this. 11. Yeah. I can't remember. It was somewhere in between 10 and 12. I was somewhere in the middle of like late elementary school.
Golly.
And I was doing this. Yeah. And yeah, from there, man, it was pretty much over for me. I loved Final Fantasy VII. I'll just never forget, you know, that kind of just, you know, you finish a game and you just have the controller and you're, I guess in my case, the keyboard, and you're just sitting there and you're just like, yeah, and it's just like, you can't even believe it. You know, not going to spoil the ending of the original for those who still haven't played it. Yeah, but it was one of those endings that left you speechless.
Yeah.
And you were just like, wow, okay. And, you know, it's also, too, it's one of those stories where when you play it as a kid, you do not realize why it's actually deep.
Yeah, like, there's just so much going on. I was just like, oh, Shinra. And then now it's like, oh, the government. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Like, environmentalism and, like, a lot more deeper topics than I definitely didn't think. Wu-Tai and...
Right.
Yeah.
How do you feel about how it's being portrayed now in the remake? Because from what I've seen, and I'm someone who stopped at 6, I was burned out from Final Fantasy after playing the first 6.
Like you played 1 through 6, and then
yeah, this happened years ago. I remember actually was.
I remember you telling me.
I think
me
I remember
this,
that.
Yeah.
Although I didn't know you stopped at 7. That's hilarious.
I thought. Well, I finished. I got through 6, and then I was just like, my brain was just like, no more. I can't do it with the crystals and the you know the I can't go and get fucking what's that dragon's name, Bahamut. I can't summon him again. Every game there's always a Sid. I was like, I can't.
Also, I really need to play 6, but go ahead with that. What you're saying,
it was a really good game. 6 is actually really good.
I heard
that's
it's
when
the
story
one.
Started jumping up.
Yeah,
I
heard
the story jumped
still
up
best.
Tremendously.
Yeah, 6 is amazing.
Yeah, 7. I'm really debating getting the remake. Right now, actually, just starting the remake and getting to the second one. Mm-hmm. And if y'all spoil it, doesn't really matter to me because, like, I think I'll enjoy it for what it is.
Okay.
It's just a gameplay aspect.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, how do you feel about how they're representing the characters? Because I noticed something that I don't think the older version could have really represented very well was how soft Barrett looks without his sunglasses.
Yeah.
And I think it's in a good way. Feel me. Barrett runs Avalanche, right? From what I can gather. And it's like, this is like a fucking terrorist organization, essentially.
Yes.
As far as the government's considered. And it's like, he is very stone cold.
Dang,
he's
as
like,
far as the government's considered. I do like that. Although, they are straight up terrorists. But yes, continue, sorry.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, he's internally like a cancer to them.
Yeah.
And it's like, he's just a guy who, what was it? What was the story? He lost somebody? It was a whole thing. But essentially... Hmm. He seems like a very nice guy, but when he's wearing his sunglasses, he looks like the leader of Avalanche, and that's what he comes across as, just that. Like, he is a guy who gets shit done. He's blowing shit up. He's got a fucking what is he? He's got the fucking gun on.
Yeah.
Like, this dude is serious. And then I realized in the remake, they made it to where they really made him humanize as like a very nice person, because like he takes his sunglasses off. That's the nicest looking nigga I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, he's beautiful. He's beautiful.
Yeah, bro. I was like, and you can just tell, like, it's the person. Like, he took his back on. He's like, all right, let's get back to killing niggas, bro.
Yeah, man.
He's beautiful. I don't know if they had that in the past. I don't know if they could have represented that because of, you know, chibi models and such.
Yeah, no. And that's kind of what's great about this remake trilogy is that they are diving a lot further into these characters, and they've added a lot of things that have mostly been really, really good in creating these much more realistic depictions of these chibi characters. And Barret's arc really goes hard in Rebirth, because that's when you learn about his full backstory and how he really became radicalized against Avalanche.
Ooh,
and
in this part 2?
Yeah, this is mostly in part 2. You get a little taste of it in part 1. In part 2, they go all the way in and show you like the full backstory. And of course, that backstory was also in the original as well. It was pivotal to his arc.
Sweet. I was wondering if they changed things up too, like that.
Yeah. And they change up a lot of the presentation there, and they do add some stuff. But again, it's mostly for the benefit, I feel like. And, you know, when you kind of see these scenes and they're voice acted and they're portrayed in much more realistic graphics, you realize just how bad, you know, like it hits you. It's like, man, if I were him in that situation, I absolutely
burn everything
would have my gun on. And I'm like, we got to ride out. Man. I'm not letting them get away with that. Like that's exactly. Yeah. Like that is exactly how you're going to feel whenever you see those scenes. Like, it's just like, it's unavoidable in a way. And so it characterizes that. And also too, I mean, he's portrayed as a charismatic leader, you know, in the original game, but I think you really feel it in these games, why people would kind of follow him to do these very drastic actions that a lot of people probably wouldn't consider doing, even though, you know, none of us really like fucking Amazon.
Oh man, sorry to put an avalanche against Amazon. You know, not my one day shipping, but at the same time.
You know, right. And that nuance is also discussed too.
That's cool.
Right, because at the same time that, you know, we're blowing up these reactors that are draining the life force from the planet, literally, we're also hurting people, because that same electricity was going to power a hospital, was going to power, you know, people's homes. And so you're taking away from people at the same time that you're giving back to the planet.
Yeah.
And also, so what is...
Didn't the blowing up actually, like, blow up people?
Right, too. That's another thing, too, is that... Well, that's also kind of the plot twist at the end of the first chapter, is that even though they calibrated the bomb to blow up only the reactor, Shinra kind of goes in there and is like, we want to turn, you know, the news cycle against them. So we're going to make the bomb blow up a little bit more to kill some people, have casualties. So that way we can have the news report on there and they'll be like, oh my God, look at all these people that these radicals killed.
That's good commentary.
That is amazing commentary. Yeah.
Yeah.
Said that even better than I remembered it.
Yeah. Yeah, so stuff like that, I feel like, amplifies just how evil, you know, unchecked corporate greed can really be.
Damn. Yeah. Like, I haven't yet played this new remake. I wanted to get through the prequel, Crisis Core, first, and I'm really liking it. Like, I thought I would feel a little burnt out because I just got through Final Fantasy 16. But I really like how they have put the themes in Crisis Core, like, where it's like, maybe we shouldn't trust the government, you know? So
yeah,
you know, like you're a top corporate number, you know, but then you're seeing like all the messed up things they do, and like all this side quests are like showing like how ruined the world has become because of what they do, or like the cleanup missions they gotta do is like, oh, we gotta take out these terrorist cells, you know, we gotta take out you know, other people from other nations, you know, like we're just these soldiers, you know, soldier is just a cleanup crew along with the Turks. Right.
Right.
It's pretty cool. Like how, like, I think like when I played as a kid, I didn't get it. I didn't get like any of these aspects, you know, even watching the movie. Now it's all like coming together. Would you say that someone who hasn't played the original game can just jump in with like a remake and then go in? Or do you think that they have to play like the OG or like have to do some more research before they get into it?
Oh, man, that is a complicated question. Okay, Square officially will tell you that for Rebirth, you could just hop right on in and enjoy Rebirth. To a degree, I think that you can. Like, if you just want to play an awesome open world game, there's like, you know, there's like 150 hours of content in that game or more.
Wow.
It's a long platinum. I think someone who's platinum, it took like 200 hours. It's
platinum
a very,
already?
Very... No. I've finished the game because I was provided a pre-release review copy. However, I'm nowhere near a platinum. I'm still working on that. it is a great game, and I think you can enjoy it in the context of Isolation. However, I do think you're probably going to want to play Remake before you dive into Rebirth. But if you can, play actually the original, because the kind of new meta twist is that there's a sequel-esque thing that's happening. And so it's actually, if you look at it in a certain way, you could actually view this remake as a sequel to the original game. Right.
Okay. So
it's, yeah.
Because I will, I guess I'll ask you first. How does that feel, having to play a game? You know, pre-release, you have to put content out, you have to review and everything. Does that make you rush the game and lose the experience? Or were you just like doing it at your own pace and being like, fuck it, I'm just going to play. And if I have to review this thing at 20 hours, I'm going to do that.
Well, also, do you feel that pressure? Like, do you feel like you got to go faster? Or like at this point, like, are you like, man, I'm the nice guy, motherfucking prince. I can do what I want.
No. I think any journalist or content creator will tell you that, you know, your review playthrough of a game is always, unfortunately, a bit stressed. Because not only are you not doing a normal playthrough of a game, because, you know, whenever you're playing a game for the purpose of creating content and reviewing and analyzing a game, you're always going in kind of with a different lens than other people. So you're scrutinizing and also finding a lot of the great things about a game in a way that maybe, like, organically you kind of look over. So you do kind of spend a little bit more time playing around with things and really trying to take some things in. At the same time, you're also rushed because you have a deadline. So you're trying to spend time and enjoy things and really take notes. Like, I have to take notes. I have like a, I think like I had like a 5-page document of just like bullet points that I was taking like while I was like reviewing the game. And then I had to go and, you know, turn that into basically a little essay so that I could put out and like, a short amount of time. And that's also the other component to that too, right? Is that you're also producing a deliverable based on your playthrough of the game. So yeah, whenever you're doing your review playthrough, there is always a rush because you're not able to say platinum a game usually during a pre-release review playthrough. Because normally at most you have like 2 weeks. Sometimes it can be worse and you can have like 1 week. For me, it was really easy to justify the time that I spent because it was just like, well, I make Final Fantasy content, so I'm going to go all in on this and I'm going to be first to like really bombard the internet with like with everything that I have going on. But yeah, review playthroughs can be incredibly stressful. And I think nobody fully understands just how much pressure that journalists are on to complete a game in time. This is why so many people are like, journalist mode is easy mode. The reason why so many journalists hit that easy mode button is because they got to complete the game like today.
you're not trying to play the game for matches. Right. Play it over and over again. I died so many times. Only was in the first chapter.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Like if you lose a boss fight like 5 times, and you got to beat the game in like a week. You know, like anyone else would be like, oh, okay, cool. I'm going to level up. I'm going to go do some other stuff. I'll circle back around to this. But it's like, if you got to beat the game this week, it's like, nah, motherfucker, we got to do something. Mm-hmm. We can't let this stand. So I'm just set the game to easy and I'm just play through it. And that's what usually ends up happening with a lot of journalists. And that's why easy mode gets dubbed like journalist mode or whatever.
That makes a lot of sense. I don't think that like a lot of us are thinking of like, oh, you guys gotta do this super quick. And I guess like you have to like, you can't do like side quest stuff, right? Like you're just like having to like beat the game to see the story mode, right?
I mean, generally speaking, you do want to complete it. I think the bare minimum that you could ever do for any review is have completed the story. So I would accept a review of most games, as long as they had completed the main story of the game, because I think that's the bulk of the content. That's what you do the majority of the game is the main story. And I think that even in a game where side quests kind of suck, as long as the main quest is good, most people would still consider that ultimately a good game. And you can skip side quests, they're optional, right?
Yeah.
So I think you can do that, but obviously in your review you should clarify how much, you know, of that side content you ended up doing. So fortunately I was able to do not like a tremendous amount of side content, but I was able to do enough side content in my Rebirth playthrough to be able to talk about it. But at the same time, you know, I've done reviews for games where I've had to play like, you know, 10 or 15 hours in a day, you know, morning I wake up to like literally time I go to sleep. And it is really unfortunate when you have to do that. But that is the nature of reviewing a game oftentimes.
I feel like that's the feeling I have whenever, because like I have some friends that always want me to like stream games with them. They're like, oh, we're going to play this game or whatever it might be. And I feel like I don't even do it normally because I don't want to, because of this feeling of like, I'm like, I don't want to have to, on my playthrough, I want to be able to like do all the little random shit. Mm. You know what I mean? I don't want to have to like rush this.
Yeah.
Because I know how I'm sure you're just like me. Both you guys have been playing RPGs just as long as I have, yes. Not longer. Mm. Where it's like, when I go to the town, I'm like going to climb these three buildings and see if there's like a treasure chest up here so I can get the one sword that everyone forgot about. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good content. I don't think anyone wants to see me do that.
Right.
But they want me to like go through the story and do the things. And like, I don't know. I'm just like too much of a, I just want to enjoy the world, I guess. Now my second question was going to be, I'm going to be one of those people most likely, unless you guys tell me otherwise, really, this is going to be, this is a serious situation right here. You're going to change the course of my life. So should I, because I was planning on just getting 7 Remake and then going into possibly Crisis Core or going right into Rebirth and being like, this is fantastic. The issue was, I wasn't sure how linear the game was. And if it wasn't linear, I was like, this might be a big ask to like commit myself to these games. I was like, maybe YouTube was better, but I wanted to try. Now, should I do that? Or are you telling me to go on Steam and get the original 7, like you said earlier? And now play through all of 7 and then go into Remake, because I'm like, bro, I don't want to be burned out again, because I think I'll love it. But I'm like, what if I'm just like, fuck, I'm not interested. Like, now I know all the characters, like, I know what's going to happen, sort of. And even though I know there's turns in Remake and Rebirth, respectively, I'm just worried.
There's turns. There is.
So are you saying I have to, like, for the betterment of me, I should go to 7, or should I just go Remake, Rebirth, and then watch the videos and see the you know, the little synopsis of all the turns? Or would that be like taking away the experience?
Listen, I think you should just play Remake and Rebirth. I do think you should play the original if you have the capacity to do it. Mm-hmm. But like what I would say is that by the time you finish Remake and Rebirth, you're gonna like look back at them and kinda actually want to play the original just because the way in which they play off of it. And you'll know that they're doing it. Because you'll, and you'll know that they're doing it, and then it'll almost drive you insane to the point
that
of where you
catch it.
Yeah, that you have to go back and what be happened? Like, yeah, like what actually happened? Because like in the first game, again, there's some pretty big twists in there. Yeah, like one of the new mysteries is that characters are basically seeing the future and they're having visions of stuff that's supposed to happen ahead of time. So
it's live. So was the original game, I guess for both of you guys, was the original game more linear? Like, could I finish that game feasibly within 80 hours, or is it going to be
way less? Bro, if you burn through that game, like 30, 35 hours.
Really?
It's really,
it was like 3 back in the day. Wasn't it one of the biggest games of the time?
Yeah. It's like one of the biggest games of the time. But honestly, video games have gotten bigger now. And that's actually, video games are actually way longer now. It's kind of funny too. We really don't think about it, but like even like RPGs like Chrono Trigger, that was like 20 hours. Right? That wasn't like 100 hours. Like nowadays we have games, it's legitimately like, you know, like Persona 5. Like, oh yeah, it's 100.
Like, I sort of don't believe you, but at the same time, I guess because like I like to do everything, but at the same time, I guess you can just sort of burn through the main story like super quick, huh?
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's the thing. We don't even think about that. Like how much more game we actually get now. Yeah. And it's kind of paradoxical too, because oftentimes we get more game and it's still incomplete.
Yeah, people were like, at least I talked to a few people and they're like, this seems like a cash grab to split up Final Fantasy VII like this, you know, like 3 different games. But the first game was absolutely stacked, like where I didn't even mind that it was just its own thing, and then I'm hearing that this one is so much more packed with content and things to do. that it sounds like it's really worth the money, and even splitting it up like this. Like, you would you say that too?
The cash grab debate has been going on since this thing was first announced.
Yeah. Although I feel like that was like unfair until it came out. Like,
right?
Like,
just
people like, oh, they're doing something different. They can't make a AAA game, you know, in 3-4 discs or something like that.
Yeah. So here is my take.
Yes.
Which is a little bit more nuanced than like what I feel a lot of people are saying. I feel like the first game probably did not need to be as long as it was. Mm. And actually looking at the size and scale of this game, I now look back at the first game and I think that the first game probably could have just been an opening to this one. Because Midgar in the original game is 4 hours.
Wow.
And they turned that 4 hour section into a 35-hour game.
There were quite a few times I was like, we're just walking a lot.
Yeah, and they padded that game to hell.
Yeah.
It could have been done in like 10 hours tops.
You know,
they had the directors of Toei running that shit.
they padded it out. But there's a bit of a story there though too, that before that they were working with a third party developer, CyberConnect 2, and CyberConnect 2 was actually going to be developing the game on behalf of Square Enix, right? And so they were going to be working together. Well, halfway through development, Square was looking at CyberConnect 2's work and it was not satisfactory to them. And so they basically fired CyberConnect 2 and took the project back into Square Enix internally. And they put that game out in a relatively short amount of time while utilizing a lot of the work that CyberConnect 2 did and just kind of like scraping it together and pushing that game essentially out the door, which makes it kind of a miracle that that game turned out as good as it did, considering the circumstances of its development. And that becomes even more clear when you play Final Fantasy VII Rebirth and the sheer wealth of content that
they're just owning it the whole time. They're not like letting another group do it this time, right?
Yeah. And so this is them internally from the beginning handling the whole project. And of course, they had the benefit of reutilizing assets, the engine, everything that they had set up from the first game. And the amount of content in this game is so staggering. And staggering to the point of where it's like, I wish y'all had just left Midgar as like a, you know, as a short little section. And then not have made it a full game.
A full game.
I don't know if that's a hot take or not. People still really love the first game, but it was. There's so many sections like visiting the sewers twice.
Yeah.
And,
no. Yeah. I platinumed that one, and it did feel like, dang, I wish I could skip so much more, in hard mode. You know, like versus having to do it again. You know, and it's just all right. So I'm excited. I'm really excited for this game. Right now, I'm trying to 100% Crisis Core for some reason. Before I get into
is Crisis Core shorter?
It is shorter, but trying to 100% everything is a little ridiculous because there's this mission, like there's 300 side quest missions. I don't know why. So but luckily I found this technique, I guess, you know, the costly punch, just punching people. 99,000.
Yep, and that's just the exploit.
Bam. Moving on. Although one other thing you have to do is like, there's like this slot machine system and you have to do that. You have to get like this lucky hit, like in a fight. So you can't like finish a fight too quickly, but also, you know, like at least trying to like, farm for this slot machine thing. It's a random thing. You don't control it at all. Just slot machines keep on going. And sometimes they hit something you need. Sometimes it just doesn't hit anything. So just trying like to make that hit like while also like not finishing a fight too quickly is sort of funny. And for some reason I said I'm gonna do that before I try to get into this game before I go to the party. I'm being dumb. I need to just get into this game right now.
I would just go ahead and get into this. Yeah, and because honestly, Crisis Core is a nightmare to 100%. It is an absolute nightmare. The missions alone, for anyone who hasn't played this game, the mission is run down a little hallway. usually.
Yeah.
There might be like one treasure chest in this hallway at most, and then you fight an enemy, and then that's the mission, and it is super repetitive. Now, the reason it's like that is because the game was originally developed for PSP. And PSP had these little UMD discs, and they only held 1.5 gigabytes, and that was it. And so you could not put a whole ton of really elaborate world design in a lot of your games, especially not for side content. Side content had to be kind of kept to a minimal. You needed all that storage for the main game. So what they came up with were these little bite-sized missions that you could do on your PSP, and they went kind of crazy with them because there's 300 of them. And, you know, the idea was that anytime you're on, like, a bus or train, you could pull out your PSP, do one of these little missions, knock it out really quickly in, like, 5 or 10 minutes, and it was fun.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Right.
But
now, and, you know, the PS5 version is unfortunately just a remaster. It's a really good remaster. I mean, the
update. I never played the PS5 graphics version.
Yeah. Oh my god.
It's just a remaster. It doesn't actually insert itself between Rebirth and Remake.
No. Yeah. Well,
I think you need to know the content though for it, right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I actually, I'm really glad I played this. Like I had always heard about Zack. Like this game is with Zack. I've always heard about him. But, like, seeing him here, like, makes him so much more of a character I actually do care about now.
Right.
You know? And I like a lot of the existing characters that, like, we get to know in Final Fantasy VII because of this game.
Right. So, Zack in the original game is maybe in there, like, 15 minutes. Like, it's very brief. You don't really get to know much about him or anything, but for the context of the original game's narrative, it's not really required. You don't have to intimately know Zack. And they came up with Crisis Core whenever they were making this thing called the compilation of Final Fantasy VII. This was when Square was like, we need to make money. And so we're going to make sequels. Yeah. We're going to make sequels and continuations of like, popular FF game. Yeah, Dirge of Cerberus. And so it's also why they did Final Fantasy X-2. It was during the era where they had Yoichi Wada as their CEO. And that was his big deal, was that, you know, we're not just going to keep putting out all these Final Fantasy games one and done. He's like, we're going to keep cashing in on them because people still like them and they'll still buy and do other media from them. Whereas, you know, Sakaguchi's philosophy before that was like, you know, very much the opposite. He's like, nope. He's like, let's not dwell on the thing we just did. We need to do the next thing, the next, you know, big new thing. And to a lot of people, of course, that's where people are like, oh, that's where they fell off. You know, because they start double dipping into, you know, older projects and stuff like that.
Because what do you think about that? I personally like 10-2.
Yeah. Well, I like 10-2 as well. Yeah.
Okay. Although. Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Like, yeah. What do you think about the compilation? Do you think that was like a good idea or a bad idea?
I think the execution of the compilation was bad.
I can agree.
I think more than anything. But one of the reasons that I think I was so willing to accept something like Crisis Core or Dirge of Cerberus growing up is because the idea was we didn't think that we'd ever get like a Final Fantasy VII remake, the whole game remade in that style. At the most, we thought we might get like a sequel, like a proper sequel to Final Fantasy VII. But then Advent Children came out. And so, you know, the idea was that like, okay, well, I guess... Advent Children is the Final Fantasy VII, too. It's a movie. No one wanted that to be a movie.
Yeah.
And it's even funny, too, because even the team that was working on Advent Children, they wanted to originally make Final Fantasy VII, too. But the reason they didn't is because it was Visual Works, and Visual Works is not a game studio. They're Square Enix's internal movie team.
Oh.
And so... Yeah, it was kind of originally pitched as like Final Fantasy VII-2, and so it kind of got shifted over into just being a film instead because the team didn't have that experience with making games.
Wow. Right. Also, what did you think about Advent Children? Like, did you watch it back then? And I guess did you also watch it recently, like when they re-put it out there?
Advent Children is true emo core.
Yes.
It's true emo core. I don't think it's like a particularly masterful film. Like, if I'm honest, like, I wouldn't go and say like, oh my god, Advent Children is like one of like the best films of like all time. That being said, it did like have its place in actually still being like an inspiring like work of art, and a lot of it comes down to the visual design and the choreography that they had. Like, a lot of the fight scenes were stuff that was like way ahead of like other CG animated films at that time. And you know, you still go back and look at that film and look at some of the fight scenes, and they have not aged badly at all. It's still top quality stuff. But yeah, it's a film that is really important to me, important to my childhood. But it is told in such a way that is so convoluted and difficult to get through. Like, I remember my first time like watching Advent Children when it came out in like 2005 or 6, and you know, my impression was just like, did I miss something in the original game?
I was like, what? I just watched it recently in theaters, like when they re-put it out, and it was way different than I remembered. Like, I remember like not understanding anything. All I remembered was like the Tifa church scene fight, and like the last Cloud fight, and I was like, what happened? Like, it was way different than I remembered. I guess they did a director's cut or something like that.
So the one they put out in films, I didn't get to go rewatch it, unfortunately, because I think I was busy actually playing Rebirth at the time. So fair. I was like, yeah, I didn't have time to like go do it. But what's funny is that after they did the DVD release, they then did a Blu-ray release years later. I actually own this Blu-ray release. And by the way, it cost $100. I was like a senior in high school. And I had to do some odd jobs to save up $100 to buy this. The reason I bought it is because it actually came with a demo for Final Fantasy 13 at the time.
Wow.
Right? And so I was like, I could be the first person in the West to play Final Fantasy 13. So I went and I saved up my $100 and I went to buy this demo online. I imported it from PlayAsia.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's hard. That's dedicated.
And so, yeah. So, but yeah, it's, they added 30 minutes worth of scenes and they reworked a lot of existing scenes in Advent Children Complete. So that's why, and Advent Children Complete, that's probably why you walked away feeling like it's a more coherent movie, because one of the things that they addressed in Advent Children Complete was making it like more coherent, making the story make a little bit more sense.
Because as a kid, I remember like getting it, like I remember borrowing it from a friend like in middle school or like, yeah, I think middle school, and I never gave it back to him. I forgive me. Like, I think I still have it back at my Dallas address. I remember like a friend gave it to me and I watched it and I was just like, I don't know what the heck just happened. Like, that looked cool, but and then I just saw it like a few weeks ago and I was like, oh, that healed like a part of my soul, you know? Like, I needed to see this complete version. And it made me more happy and excited for like actually the game coming out. Like, you know, like, oh, maybe there's hope again for Square Enix and all that. Also,
I was
go ahead. Go ahead. I was going to change topics.
No, I was going to say, but no, I've noticed that like Final Fantasy, it seems consistent that they always kind of push a graphical barrier that we've had around. Like, whenever they have games come out, it's kind of weird because, for instance, 10, when 10 came out,
9 to 10.
I guess Square Enix in general. Because do you remember? Okay, first we'll go with it was like 10 came out. I remember there was a trailer for it where the big fucking blue dude shows up, the giant guy with all the fucking hair,
Kimar.
Yeah, he pulls up. I remember that was a trailer back when 2001 or something. What was like? It was like way back in PlayStation 2.
Yeah, 2001. Remember PlayStation 2?
If you look back at PlayStation 2, those graphics are horrendous.
Yeah.
So they put that out, and you're like, everyone was like, "What the fuck is that? Like, that's the most real shit we've seen in our lives." Like, you know what I mean? And then I remember because like their cinematic team does great work when it comes to visualization. Same thing happened with Kingdom Hearts, to be honest. Kingdom Hearts, like, that they played the fuck out of that intro scene. Like, that was insane. The water, like, this water looks real. And then you play the game, you're like, this looks okay. This looks pretty good.
The cinematics are always way ahead.
Yeah, they're always ahead. And I remember for Advent Children, at the time it was 2011. So Advent Children came out in 2005, I think, which is wild. First off, that's insane. Mm. That's what is that? That's Wii era.
Oh,
so yeah. It came out 2006 or 5. That game was so ahead of its time graphic, or that movie was so ahead of its time graphically for what we were doing, that I was working to get a job with a real big TV company at the time. And I was about to work at this Best Buy in like the TV section. They had me doing all these tests. And I was like 19. I was like, oh man, I got to study. Got to do this thing. And one of the guys was like, hey, I'm going to get you this job, bro. Just come over. This guy named Kevin. There's this Asian dude. He's like, I'm going to pull up, bro. We're going to knock it out. I'm going to teach you all about TVs and shit. I was like, all right, bet. I pull up on him and he's like, he made me watch Advent Children, then explain to me all the things that are happening in the movies. Like the lighting right here, that's why we play it on our TVs. And he made me watch the whole goddamn movie.
Wow.
I was like, half this.
Oh, no.
Because you also had no Final Fantasy knowledge, also, right?
Bro, yeah, but he was like, the resolution in this scene is insane. You would never get this in Shrek. And I was like,
oh,
no, I get it. Just tell me that. Yeah, man, but it was like, this is 2011. He's playing something in 2005, and this is I can't remember the name of the company. It's a big TV company, like a really popular one, the more expensive brand. But he was like, when we go to Best Buy, he plays on all the TVs to make sure everyone understands the fidelity of the TVs. He played a thing from 6 years ago.
Yeah.
To prove to people now how good these TVs were.
Yeah.
I was like, that's insane.
Yeah.
How far Final Fantasy was pushes it.
Yeah. That's Advent Children. Yep. It was a masterpiece in those ways. The story, maybe not so much, but all the other aspects of it were really masterful.
You know, I've been thinking about that with art, honestly, like something that like might look the best, but doesn't have like the best story. And then like, I'm like, what do I rank that? You know, like it has like amazing elements. Like honestly, Final Fantasy 15, like I right now am struggling to be like, what do I rank that it to myself? You know, I platinumed it. And I think it had like amazing music. It looked dope. I thought the characters, well, most of them were pretty cool, you know, but I was bored like half, like a lot, like throughout the halfway points, you know, like if it wasn't a boss fight, I was bored. And I'm like, how do I like rank that? You know, like there's other like titles too, I think, like beautiful, amazing elements, but like for me personally, Blue Eye Samurai.
Right.
I think I'm the only person. Yeah, I'm the only person.
Yes, you are.
I know. Everyone's like, it's amazing. And I'm like,
yes, you are.
I know.
You fell off, bro.
I think that's the only divergent opinion I have that's like, because also I recognize that everyone loves it. I watched it all and I was like, I think it's okay. Maybe.
Nah. you fell off.
Everybody man. Like,
so,
oh.
So wait, you said 15. You didn't mean 16, right? Just to clarify.
Oh, yeah. Oh, both. Yeah, 15 and 16. There we go.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. There we go. I was like, because when you said bored, except for like when I was in a boss fight, I was like, is he talking about 16?
Yes. Because
I was like, that's kind of a criticism of 16 that's like really common.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I'm glad I'm not alone.
Yeah. Yeah, 16 really felt like that. This is kind of... This is something I tried to explain on Twitter once, but like, you know, there's only so much nuance you can fit in small amount of characters, and a lot of fans didn't really get what I was saying with that. But you don't spend most of your time in the like 6 icon boss fights that are in that game.
Yeah.
Or however many there are. I think there may actually be 10 times total that you get to transform in the Ifrit, but it's like, and not all of them are like really fun or particularly great. Like the first icon fight in the demo, which I kind of forgave because I was like, oh, it's just part of the demo. But all you're doing is holding triangle that whole
fight. Just falling like, through this
cave. Because you don't even like control the character or anything. You just hold the triangle button, and so it's like, you know. And so while those set pieces are big and beautiful, some of them were really cool. Like the Titan fight was like out of this world. But at the same time, I'm just like, if I were doing this more often and controlling this more often, it would be a lot more impactful.
Yeah.
Whereas it's literally just a few fights throughout the game that you're really getting to do that. And most of the game, what you're actually doing is collecting like dirt for like this NPC.
That hurt me.
Yeah.
That was the first time I had felt like I don't care about the side quest. I had never thought that in a game like I usually play. Like I usually go around talking to the chickens and the cows. Hey, how you? You know, I was playing Baldur's Gate right before this, and I actively talk to the animals, right? Because they have something to say. You know, I talk to the kids and the people, whatever, right? Oh, you need to go get some flour from this city, old lady? Well, I got you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This was the first time I was bored. Like, you want me to do what?
Well, a big part of it was that because of the poor itemization in the game and the game's lack of, like, a decent upgrade system, whenever you would do most side quests, there wasn't actually any tangible reward for it. You would get experience and maybe level up, but it's also sort of like, because of the game's hack and slash nature, as long as you're like decent enough at action games and honestly just playing through like the main story, you'll always be on the level that you need to be. So it was just sort of like there was never a reward that you got from doing a side quest that made you actually go, crap, I gotta do the side quest.
Yeah.
And story-wise, there were some really good side quests, especially toward the end, like where that paid off in like a huge way. Some of which even surprised me with some of the content that they had in them. But the problem is that the game never incentivized you to actually pursue the actual, you know, quest line in its entirety, right? And so, you know, a user or a player will do a couple of side quests at the beginning of the game. And if they realize, they figure out that all these side quests are kind of just boring, then they're just like, I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
They'll skip past it, right? Because they're just like, the game is just going to have me do something dumb and it's going to be boring. And unfortunately, all the 16 side quests really are like that for the most part. Until like the last quarter of the game where they start to actually get really interesting and pay off. But it's like, by that point, who cares?
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
I was going to ask him, that was because like you kind of answered it just now, but one of the questions I had earlier for you was, what makes a game's side quest like feel important even? Because they're side quests, right? So part of it is like, they're not a part of the main quest. You shouldn't have to do them. But there's something like to be said when there's world building attack. I think, and this is like just me off the top of my head, I think a side quest should have some world building involved in it to where you feel the incentive to do it if you enjoy the game, right? I think, for instance, when I think of an Arkham game, like one of the Batman games, doing a side quest made me like, I was like, oh shit, this is so cool. Like, this character is in the game and he might come back in the next game and it might be like a thing. But I saw him, you know, I saw Killer Croc early because I went to this random sewer and it was this whole thing. And then he does show up later and he kills some people. And it's like, this is crazy. Or Elden Ring, another game where it's like, there's so much side shit. But the side shit goes into like, if you're like, oh, the side quest, I'll do this little thing. And you're like, side quest, I learned a little bit about this place. Who cares? You know, you might not care. But then every once in a while, you'll hit a side quest and you'll be like, this thing goes deep. And it takes you to a whole different world, essentially. Like, you go into a portal, now you're in a world because of a side quest. And I think there's other games. RPGs have a lot of issues with this right now, especially the OG JRPGs. I don't know if you guys felt the same way. But Grand Blue, I was playing that, and the side quests are quite literally like, I don't even read them. Because it's like, a dude will talk to you and be like, text pops up. I'm like, all right, what do you need?
In Grand Blue, I was actually like sort of interested in like these side quests and like seeing all that text. Like when I did give it a chance, like they were actually interesting in my, some of them.
I like the fate missions were cool, right? Backstory.
Okay, that's
shit.
What I'm talking about. Like,
The standard side quests.
Can you give me like a piece of dirt and I'll do a thing, I guess, right?
Yeah, they'll be like, get me these rubies. Yeah. And I'm like, what do I get for this? Okay, dragon stuff? Okay, cool.
The fate stuff, I do that. Yeah, the whatever. Yeah, and also, like, one of my favorite side quests I think about with this was from Witcher. Witcher 3 is the Battle of the Bastard, I believe, or something like that. But, like, it was, like, such an impactful storyline about, like, fatherhood, and, like, it meant a lot. And, like, going back to 16, I had a lot of cool themes, but I felt like it was always, like, almost there, but not yet. I just didn't care. Maybe they were talking too much, or it was just, like, I don't get a lot for this, so I don't super care
What is that?
Like, it, I don't know. Like, it, like, also, like, they were talking about, like, racism, which I thought was cool, but maybe I was so stuck on, like, oh, they don't want to put black people in here for some reason. I just can't, I can't get jiggy with it. Like, the racism thing was like, oh, you're born a magic person, so you, they put a tattoo on your face to show you got that, but then they would just get the tattoo, like, burnt off. You know, like, it has a scar, but no one recognizes that they, you know, they have a scar of the tattoo. So it's like, right. Oh, congenital disease, I guess. So, hey, you're a normal person like us. And it is.
What were you going to say?
What were you about to say?
Like, going back to that, specifically, it's like, what makes a side quest, like, in your eyes, because you played more RPGs than I think everybody in this lobby at this point. Maybe guys when you were competing, I'm not sure.
No, he's like, a master.
Yeah, like, what would you call, like, what would make a game? If someone was going to make a game right now, they're like, hey, we need extra content, and what would you say, like, hey, these side quests need so people give a fuck in the first place? Oh, that's one of the biggest issues I have sometimes.
Oh, man, there's, like, a whole field, the whole study on this. Side quests are, you know, they're really hard to make good. The problem with designing a good side quest is that you want to make a side quest feel like it's impactful, but you also don't want to make it feel like, oh, you didn't do that side quest? Well, you fundamentally don't understand this part of the story or this part of the world, right? Mm. So you have to do this balance where you're in between trying to make it so that it's important, but so that it's not like so important that you need it for the story and that it's not so obscure that no one cares. So there's a delicate balance there. And then the other component is the reward. The reward is also tremendously important. And that's one of the things that Final Fantasy 16 was lacking was, you know, if you do the side quest, you're still getting a thing that's intangible to you that doesn't really add to your play style, how you enjoy the game. One of the games that I always look at that was like incredible for side content too was like Majora's Mask. Because I look back on Majora's Mask and I think about how that game makes you end up doing every side quest in a very organic way, right? Like without you necessarily setting out to do that, right? And it's really cool because the player, a lot of times, they would unlock hidden mechanics within each of those masks, right? Like, you know, like the bunny mask that would make you like run faster and do things like that. And so all those different masks, they'd have like a little twist or something, and you can go around and you'd get different NPC dialogue from wearing those different masks. So I think that if you can introduce something new or novel to the player for having done those side quests, or if you can open up a new area for the player, like if a side quest leads you into a secret dungeon that you would have never gone through, if it leads you to part of a map that you would have never explored otherwise, Rebirth actually does a really good job of this. For example, like with Rebirth, if you're in the first region of the game, there is the Deadlands, I want to say it's called. But you would never actually go that way if you're just following the main story. Like you never actually, there's nothing in the main story that actually leads you in that direction. However, if you're going through the side quests, then you'll actually discover there's like this whole other part of the region, like secret part of the region with all these other things and all these other items and all these other hidden discoveries that you found. Well, now that I know, and they put this early in the game, right? This is in the first few hours of the game. So that tells the player right away, if you do the side quest, you can find like a little hidden region that you don't need to go through.
It's pretty neat.
And so right then and there, I'm going to think, oh, I need to start doing these side quests. I can find literally anything. Sky's the limit, right? If you can find a new area that you wouldn't do anything, right? So now you're like, okay, I got to do everything. And then another good thing that Rebirth does too is that like it would like one of the early side quests expands the lore of the mayor and the town of Calm, and you learn a lot more about that. So a lot of topics that people have interest in is really good. A lot of the fate of the NPCs in the first game is actually discussed at a further point in Rebirth. And it's also very interesting too, because Remake was slammed pretty hard for how bad its side quests were, because a lot of Remake side quests were like, go kill a bunch of mutant rats.
Yes. Yes, I remember that for sure. So
right.
I'm excited. Yeah. You got me hyped. I'm like, what am I doing playing Crisis Core right now?
Yeah. Now that's an example of bad side content. Because I mean, you can, sometimes you get okay rewards, but the process of doing it sucks because you just go do a fight in a hallway. And
I'm just 56% in the mission, so I'm like, oh, but I'm just watching like TV shows on the side, like while I do that.
I feel like that's always the issue, right? When you start feeling repetitive about your side quests, it just happens. Like you'll be like, oh, this game, essentially just being like, hey, go fetch this. And I don't know who's in charge of side quests when they do games like that. But they'll be like, fetch this, and there'll be another person you talk to like has an icon over that. Go fetch this, and you're like, bro, okay. Like, but it's like I don't care about the world anymore. And now you're literally an NPC.
Yes, all right.
Like you come across them. I think some of the best NPCs are the ones that you remember later on when you're done with the game.
Yeah,
like, remember that dude from because in Majora's Mask, I remember. Lon Lon Ranch. Like, I was in that bitch, and the aliens showed up, and I was like, the fuck is happening, dog? And I was like, they're taking the cows, and I was like, dog racing. This is a side piece. Like,
right.
But I remembered everything. And this is, I remember this is a big point of contention for a lot of game developers, because like, a lot of game devs are mad. I want to know what your perspective is on this. Elden Ring came out. Elden Ring. Game devs were mad. They were like, this is not how game development should work. There's nothing indicating where you should go next. There's no like, da-da-da-da. But it was one of the biggest selling games of the year. I think it got game of the year. And I did notice, like you said, so it's like, in one regard, they broke the system, right? Because I'll say the good thing first. They did well because they made their side quests lead to big things.
Right.
Right? Like, Melania, one of the hardest bosses in the game, is a side piece. Like, you never have to see her.
Oh, really?
I stopped playing the game for a little bit because I lost her so many goddamn times. Mm-hmm. Came back and beat her after 2 days of grinding just her.
Yeah.
But it was like, she's such a big part, and she's a pivotal part of the DLC coming out.
Yeah.
There's DLC coming out. Her brother is a big part of that. And even her brother was a part of another side quest that you don't ever have to see.
Yeah.
You talk to like a guy, and he's like, bro, you want to go kill some people? And you're like, these things are evil, but if you do it, it'll lead to a portal that goes to a different world. It looks like almost like hell, like on some Berserk shit. And then you'll be like in there. You meet her brother who it's like a lot of shit. And then you're like, now for the DLC, you have to touch the brother's hand, go to the nether realm, and it's a whole different world. And this is all shit you could just beat the game without. But it's like Elden Ring made you want to do everything.
Yeah, and so
you want to do lore. But I wanted to get to the point of the problem was you said earlier, you were like, game, a big part of this is like making sure that people don't feel like the side quests are imperative to the story. But I think Elden Ring broke that law too, which is another thing I think game devs were mad about. Because like, they were like, oh, like you would not understand the lore if you didn't do them, but you didn't have to do them.
Right.
It was weird.
So, and that's like part of the thing too, is that I feel like most people will do it if you create that magical experience of you could have not saw this. They could have also like not put this in the game. But you did it and you discovered it and it feels like your achievement, if that makes sense. Mm. Right? Like, there is always that feeling of like, you know, you ever played a game and like you stumbled onto like a secret dungeon or like something completely optional. And like at that moment, you felt almost like this magical feeling like in your gut. Yes. Like oh, like the game. Yeah, so like your enjoyment of the game, like your appreciation of it, like immediately deepens. At that moment, like, oh my god, okay, this is interesting. Like, now I gotta do everything. If you don't have that now I gotta do everything moment early, I think that is why Elden Ring can get away with it and like other games can't. Because Elden Ring very much has that, oh, I gotta explore everything. I gotta do everything. I gotta see like what this leads to in order to do it. And most people end up doing it. So it never ends up like, oh, I skipped all the side quests, so I didn't really know. Because if you start playing Elden Ring, you want to do everything. You want to explore that new dungeon, that nook and cranny of the world that doesn't directly lead you to. And it, because it's the type of game that lends to you doing that by default without the developers having to tell you to do it, I feel like people will discover that like automatically. Like you won't have to be like, you won't have to like put like a quest marker somewhere to be like, oh, go there. Yeah. And it makes the game feel cool. It's what makes that game feel living in a way.
It's kind of like you said, where it's like the reward system is fantastic too. Mm-hmm. Like there's so many different classes and stuff in Elden Ring. Like, sometimes you do get faith weapons, and you're like, I don't build faith. I can't use this. But, like, the idea of you getting these weapons that maybe none of your friends have, and, like, just, like, I'm going to this random fucking cranny on the shore. And, like, who goes to this part of the shore? I did, and I found this fucking hammer. This shit is crazy. It's cracked. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I think it's a really good job of making, like, incentivizing you to do these things. Mm. I guess the last thing I wanted to ask you that I had on my mind was how you felt about Final Fantasy movies in general. Because I went to the theaters
for 15, right?
15. I went to the theaters for 15, and I swear to God, I did fall asleep twice. And it was like, yo, bro, I was hyped. I was like, I gotta watch this movie. Boys, like, this is when the game came out. I was like, these characters look dope. I'm excited for it. What's the movie? And it was just like, it felt like I was watching a what's that one guy who did the Dead Fantasy? I always forget his name.
Oh, Monty Ohm.
Yeah, it felt like a Monty Ohm production, bro. Like, it was just fights. And more fights. I was like, bro, I don't.
So, Final Fantasy movies have not been good. Straight up. I don't think that's a controversial take.
Yeah.
They haven't been that good. Cool. A lot of people, like myself, they have a soft spot for Advent Children, but they still acknowledge that as a film and as a story, it was not like high grade stuff. Now, for a while, I was just completely blackpilled on video game tie-in media because it was just all so bad. And I think it was only recently that we started to get film and shows that really challenged that idea. Yes. We started to get Castlevania, Cyberpunk, Edgerunners, The Last of Us, those sorts of things. And then that completely changed my perspective on it because I'm like, okay, we can do this. The first season of The Witcher.
To say also, hey,
not
One Piece.
The rest of it. One Piece, even, like, which really changed the way that we look at anime live action. I could have a whole discussion with you about how much I enjoyed the One Piece live action, but one thing that I think that the One Piece live action has in great common with these other films and stuff that I mentioned was great casting. I feel like you would actually become attached to the live action version of Zorro in like his own unique way, because he was in a way he's kind of like his own guy.
Yeah,
you know,
like you're not comparing him constantly to, like, you are comparing him constantly to, like, the anime or the manga, but at the same time he gets to be his own entity. Like, yeah, like I love how like the cast for live action feels like its own entity within the franchise umbrella, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like its own interpretation. It's kind of like, and maybe I'm off base with this. You're the bigger One Piece fan. I mean, I'm just like a One Piece guy. I still need to actually like sit down and like go through the whole anime. But like,
read
the manga. That's what a lot of people say. But like, I feel like it kind of has a space almost where it's like a Marvel or like a comic book thing where it's like, this is like this continuity of this character. This is Miles Morales from the game. And this is Miles Morales from, from Spider-Verse. Right. You don't have to they don't have to be the same thing. Mm-hmm. Right. They don't have to be the same Miles Morales, but it's the same general concept, the same DNA of the character. But I feel like also too, and that also extends to The Last of Us, I feel like too, which really nailed that as well. So there is a great way to do video game live action adaptations or do video game stuff like that, just depending on the video game property. Not every game can receive necessarily a live action or a film or an animated film either. However, when I look at something like Cyberpunk Edgerunners, I actually feel that's probably the future of adapting video game worlds to some sort of series where it was its own series within Cyberpunk's world. Mm-hmm. And both of them can be enjoyed in isolation. You can go watch Edgerunners and have no idea what Cyberpunk is. You can play the game and have no idea what the animation is. But if you watch both together, they synergize really well. And they give you a bigger, complete picture of the world.
Yeah.
And I think that is actually the future of, you know, creating either animated or live action companion pieces, rather than trying to
retell the story, tell a different story within the world, right?
Right, tell a different story. Yeah, that is meant for the medium.
Yeah,
right, because that's also a big thing. Now, when you look at like Advent Children or Kingsglaive, they do that in a way, right? They do tell that. However, I think a big part of the problem is that when you look at something like, you know, Kingsglaive, for example, a lot of the issues with Kingsglaive extend out of Kingsglaive in the Final Fantasy 15. Like, you know, like, for example, they need Glaucka to be killed by Nyx because that's his big bad guy. But that's the guy that killed Noctis' father. So now you killed him in the movie and you don't get to kill him in the game. You don't get to avenge your father in the game, right? And so there's a lot of issues there, too. And so I think that, like, at least when it comes to Square, they are on the right track in terms of making those things, you know, their own stories. But another issue, though, too, is like with Kingsglaive, is that if you don't watch Kingsglaive, you don't. Final Fantasy 15 is kind of random.
With the anime that they have too, right? And the DLC.
Right. With the anime, I felt the anime was maybe even more offensive in a way than like separating out Kingsglaive, because I was like, you basically don't get the backstory of the main characters if you don't watch the anime.
Isn't that crazy?
It just never happened. It's just completely omitted from the game.
Yeah, it's like too many ways, too many different mediums, I guess, of like trying to understand this story, right?
Right.
Or if you don't get all the pieces of this, then you can't really enjoy the story to the fullest, right?
Right. And so what they have to do if they're going to continue to do this is they have to make it so that it can be something like Edgerunners, where I can go hop on, watch Edgerunners. Edgerunners can be its own thing. I can never touch the game if I want to. But what happened was is that after I finished Edgerunners, even though Edgerunners is its own story with very few overlapping characters, Adam Smasher being one, though, that was a great idea. Well, then, bam, I want to go play the game. I want to fight Adam Smasher now because I watched the anime. And no spoilers, but everyone knows what Adam Smasher does in the anime that will make you want to go fight him.
Yes.
And then you get to go do that, and you play the game.
That's dope.
And it recontextualizes that whole fight for you in a good way. But you didn't need that context in the first place. But now you have it. And now it adds that other layer to it. And then you're like, oh, my God, I can't wait to fight this motherfucker.
That's dope.
Yeah. I definitely think there's, like, I like what you, I like almost everything you just said. So it's just, like, I think whenever you're having a tie-in of some sort, I wonder if it is somewhat the safer route to make. And I've said this before, but I was like, I wonder if it's the safer route to make a game where it's not tied to the direct characters of the game or anime or whatever it might be. And whenever you make your next source or your next medium. So, for instance, we have there's a manga called My Hero, or an anime called My Hero. They have a thing called My Hero Vigilantes, which is a manga, which is its own manga, but it's about a different kid entirely.
Yeah.
And he does cross paths with some of the characters in My Hero, like the older brother of Ito. Like the speedster, he crosses paths with Stain at one point, but then he ends up getting shipped off to America to become a sidekick over there. By the end, it's a lot of stuff. But essentially, it's like people really talk about it. They're like, I like that more than My Hero. But it's like you give it the opportunity to live on its own rather than being like, let's do Deku side stories. Like, I don't think people give a fuck, dog.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I think people, like, you have the main series, let the main series be the main series, and then do something different. I think Cyberpunk Edgerunners did that. We're like, you're your guy, and you're doing your Cyberpunk shit in Cyberpunk 2066 or whatever the fuck the name of the game.
77.
That means 77 has 66. But it's like, when you do Edgerunners, it's a whole different kid, and it's like he's living in the world that's already been developed, which I think is so fucking fascinating. And I think they could do the same thing, and I think, in my opinion, I think Cowboy Bebop would have been better off doing that. You had the anime, we understood the idea of the world. Give me three different bounty hunters or something and let them be on their own ship and let them function going to Ganymede or going to Jupiter or going to – don't go to Jupiter. There's nothing there.
Yeah.
Or going to whatever planet and experiencing things and just in the world of Cowboy Bebop. And that probably would have just been fantastic.
Yeah, like I think about like with Avatar. Nerds will always get mad. I think about like with the Avatar live action is the sort of like, why do that again? You know, like what, you know, like what can they do differently? Or like, will this get people into the franchise, right? Yeah, honestly, maybe they should have done a different story instead of retelling the OG story, right? And honestly, in a worse way. Like, it's still solid, at least in my opinion. But at the same time, it's like, why retell the story, you know, one beat for beat when there's other stories they could probably have done, like, in live action, I guess, if they want to do a different medium like that, right? Or what do you think? Do you think that is a good idea to – I mean, you probably don't, but do you think it's, like, worthwhile to try retelling stories like that in live action? Like, it worked for Last of Us and One Piece, but it didn't really work so much for Cowboy Bebop and maybe Avatar.
Right. One Piece is a good example of it working.
And it makes sense for One Piece because One Piece is, like, so –
Yeah, Last of Us got mixed.
Was it?
Right.
Yeah. Last of Us got a little mixed.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't truly
one. Some episodes were really good, and then some episodes you're like, bro, what the fuck are you doing? Like,
yeah.
Why are we going through this episode at all?
Yeah.
So the One Piece is a good example. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Right. I believe firmly that it is probably a better idea to create original content within that world because you're trying to beat your last at bat whenever you're doing any type of remake or adaptation of these stories, right? And so with The Last of Us, right, they always had the game, and you're always going to be put in comparison to the game. Now, any type of animated medium like games is going to have a lot of liberties that you don't have in a live action. And so it's pretty much always going to come out on top because those liberties are going to allow them to do things that you're not able to do in a live action and be expressive in ways that you can't be expressive in a live action. And so it does work out in some situations like One Piece and that. But I think that generally speaking, you don't have to make if you're not making something that people have to immediately compare the other thing to, people are always going to be able to take that thing for what it is rather than being like, well, it ain't got shit on, you know, the game or like, you know, like the original anime, right? Or whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can do it. You probably can get away with it. There's cases where it has been done. But like most of the time, it's just going to be like, man, fuck off. Like, I hate this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause like, technically that's what Kingsglaive did, but it's like, it's just, it felt like it was supposed to be a DLC game. It felt like it was supposed to be like a part of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, it
like,
well,
rather than a movie.
Well, do you know the development history behind that?
I would love to hear that. Like, also, I've been loving all these history bits. Like, it recontextualizes so much for me.
Okay. So, have you guys seen the trailers for Final Fantasy Versus 13?
Back in the day, like with the slow-mo, back in the day, with back the swords.
Yeah. So, the original opening was the Insomnia invasion that was happening. That was with Noctis, and there was no Nyx character. And pretty much all those scenes were completely rewritten to exclude Noctis. And so basically, the way the game originally opened was Noctis and his boys escaping the city as it was being invaded.
That sounds dope.
Sounds incredible. Well, during the development of Final Fantasy XV, what happened is that Tetsuya Nomura, who's the creator of Kingdom Hearts and the original creator of the Versus/15 project, he got moved off because they were like, this project has been taking too long and we need you to work on Kingdom Hearts 3 and we need you to work on Final Fantasy VII Remake and we can have someone else take over this project. So they had a different director take over. And one of the kind of conditions that they had was that they needed to put this game out like by 2016 and it cannot go beyond that. So they had a very, very short time to basically scrap everything that they had been working on and create a brand new game. And they had to ship it out in like 3-ish years. And they were looking at the opening scene of the game, which the opening scene of the game was like a very big set piece. Very elaborate thing that they had to create because, you know, doing that invasion scene was going to take a long amount of time. So what they decided to do instead was they were going to create a film, a film that basically isolated that opening so that they didn't have to to deal with making it in the game, and they could just focus on creating the open world and all that other stuff. So they decided to make the film. But the issue is that in making the film, they didn't want to include Noctis in it, because if they did include Noctis, then you'd have like this weird thing where they felt like you would need to watch the film in order to play the game, which ended up happening anyway.
You had to.
But yeah, they created Nyx so that he could fill in the role, which ironically, Nyx and Noctis both mean knight. So there you go. But yeah, so Nyx was meant to fill in the role that Noctis was meant to. And in fact, you can actually see him subbing in for like a lot of the shots from Versus, where Nyx was talking to Lunafreya in front of like the painting of Etro, who is supposed to be like the goddess of death, but that concept was cut entirely in the development. So Etro, but that's actually funny. They actually left the painting of Etro in the scene. So you have like this fictional goddess who never actually comes up in the story, but she still has like this big artwork that's left front and center in the movie. And that's probably because during the production of the movie, they actually ended up changing a ton of story in the game. And so a lot of the story plot points from the movie and the game don't entirely line up.
Oh, God, what a, it's a big all or nothing, right? Like, you're trying to expand the world through different mediums. By doing that, it's like, if things don't make sense, if every team isn't on base with each other, you're going to have these weird plot holes and shit.
Like crazy.
Right. Someone who's creatively in charge.
Right. And you have to have a strict visionary, one guy who's like, this is it, and we're not changing it.
Yeah. This is how this works.
Yeah. One team. Don't try to mess with it as much as possible.
Yeah, run it by him, bro. I don't want to hear like, well, you know, Link was actually the cousin of Zelda. I'm like, but we have her dating here. you can't bring that up now, do you?
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, then it becomes really weird, right? And really disjointed, and it's like, because one of the things, I don't know if you caught this, like, you know, in like late game 15, when Arden is like trying to mess with you, he has like this illusion of like Nyx's like body hanging.
Oh,
I was like,
I don't know what's going on anymore, especially after. Right.
But if you never seen the movie, you're like, who?
Yeah, very much.
You're like,
even
like,
I literally saw the movie and I was like, what? Right. Time skip? What?
Right. And so there's all those things that just don't line up.
Yeah.
They don't, the two pieces of media there don't really make that much sense with each other. It's like they could vaguely be connected, but they aren't. But my problem, I guess, with 15 is that the way they connect the events of the game to the movie is that instead of showing really the invasion or having Noctis be there like he's supposed to be, Noctis just hears about it in the newspaper. He hears
like in the newspaper.
In the newspaper he hears that like, hey, did you hear, bro? Your dad died. It's in the paper. And I'm just like, I was just like, holy crap. And it's like, it gets even weirder when I guess they got cell phones, man.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, isn't it like a modern nation? They got cars.
Yeah.
You're pushing, the first scene in the game is you pushing this pretty nice car because they ran out of gas. So,
yeah.
So,
yeah.
And they never had cars before in Final Fantasy. So, at least that
they
I
did.
Remember.
They did in FF8.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right.
You drove the car. Yeah.
Well, they should have cell phones absolutely here. Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of things that I was just like, I don't understand like why they're doing this way. I guess, do you have hope?
It is kind of weird.
Yeah. I was just going to ask. I was like, how do you feel about like the franchise now? And I guess like what's next for you now with, I mean, because you have like a lot of good gaming knowledge. So it sounds like games is still like your thing. Maybe fitness now too, right?
But
like how do things look for you, especially now with Rebirth now out? Like, do you have hope for like the franchise, and then also do you have like what's the plan, if you have a plan?
Oh man, wow,
that's a
great
lot.
Question.
Yeah.
Well, it is a lot. So with Final Fantasy, I do think that Rebirth actually has instilled a lot of faith back in the fan base. It's currently sitting at a 92 on Metacritic, which is really, really, really good. It is one of the highest rated Final Fantasy games ever.
Wow.
At least since like the PS1 game. It's doing really good. It's doing phenomenally well. I really enjoyed the game. There are some narrative choices that are a bit puzzling that happened in the last quarter. Uh-oh. And obviously I'm not going to spoil that one because that's that's brand new. So I'll let you guys figure that one out. See if you agree with me or not. You may play through it and be like, I have no idea what he meant. The whole thing was flawless. But there were some things for me that, yeah. And but overall,
so you weren't about all of it. It wasn't like 100% like this is fantastic. The direction you think, you kind of like
nuance. In my review,
which is normal.
In my review, I called it the best Final Fantasy game ever made.
Wow.
I still stand by that statement. You go through the quantity and quality of content in that game, the combat system, the characters, the music, the open world. It is the best game they have ever made. Period. It's the best. I don't think Square Enix has ever made a game this good before. That being said, some of the narrative choices are still going to really confound you, I think. But it is the best game that they have made.
Wow.
At the same time.
Okay.
So
I think what I'm gonna
go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was about to say, I think what I'm gonna end up doing, I think what you guys convinced me to do, I'm pretty sure this will be a thing. If not today, probably tomorrow, if I got some time, I will probably go on Steam, get the original 7, play through that, skip what is it? Dirge of Cerberus.
Yeah, don't do that.
don't do that.
I'll go into Remake and then get Rebirth, and that'll probably be my next 3 months of living. That's probably what I'll do, just so I can catch up and like really be in on this shit. So when the next one comes out, I'm like,
you're with it.
Because guys will be talking about stuff. Sometimes he'll be like, bro, you got to understand. There are rich people. You got to take out the. I'm like, bro, what are you saying? He's like, no, there's bodybuilders. Trust me. I'm like, bro, what are you talking
about? Oh, man. I'm trying to tell him about the party. Also, I should talk to you about the party. I am excited for the party that we're going to be doing on March 23rd. Would love to have. I'm hoping to have you as a host. Cause
yes, of course.
Wanted to. Like, the funny thing is, like, I wanted to get this party a long time ago, like when the first game came or when Remake came out, and then the pandemic happened. And honestly, I'm glad, like, I mean, not glad for the pandemic, but glad to have had the pause, you know. So, you know, 4 years later now we can like do it up, honestly. So excited. I've been wanting to do this casino party with you for a minute, so
I'm super excited for this.
Yeah, so doing a Gold Saucer casino party, being ambitious of trying to do it in Dallas and then the next week in LA.
But that's really crazy, man.
You know,
it's a tight schedule.
I'm just like, screw it, go big, go home. You know, like, honestly, like, you saying that the game is great and worth it gave me hope, and I was like, you know what, let's make this party happen. So yeah, like, I want some bodybuilders because squatting is like always like been a big part, and like just body building has always been like a weird big part of Final Fantasy VII. At least that's why I think. Like, would you agree with that?
Yes, it has always been like a weird sub niche within FF7 specifically. Yeah.
I was like, I don't know about like in other games, but for sure in FF7.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because like, I'm having a hard time because one of logistically, we were talking about like getting, you know, swole dudes to do the thing and like run it. And it sounded cool. Like, I like the idea of a competition like that. Like, I always like competitive stuff. One of our issues that we ran into was like, we don't want people sweating at the party. Or do we? And then feeling like they got to go hang out with their friends after they just like burned up like their armpits and shit. Like doing like pull-ups or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we're sweating and then your clothes are all like, oh, I feel gross as shit. Like, you don't want that. So it's like, there was just a lot of, I was like, because there's no showers. I was about to say, was there a way to like tell them to bring clothes ahead of time? Like, hey, if you're going to enter the competition, do the thing. Because we're going to have a squat competition. Bring some shorts, like, for anyone who went center. Is there a way to like get around that? Or is it kind of just like,
I'm just thinking, like, at this point, you, like, the bodybuilders, you guys will be the ones competing. Like, and if anybody else wants to, sure, they can. But, you know, that's on them. Maybe I'll bring some wet wipes or something like that. I don't know. At this party, like, I'm planning for it to be a casino party. People can win prizes, like, just doing different activities. One different activity that I'm planning to do is this bodybuilding aspect of having people do squats, or you bodybuilders, maybe people just betting on the bodybuilders, like which one will do the most, like within a minute, you know, and, like not too many, so that way you're not like really making up a sweat, but maybe just like speed for it.
You make it 30
okay,
seconds.
30 seconds. There you go.
30 second burst. I want to sprint. I don't want to. No
there
minute.
We go. We're still going.
We're not getting the whole track in a minute, bro.
We're still going. But anyways, I'm excited to. One, this was a fantastic talk. Like, you are a master of this knowledge. It has, like, you have redeemed a lot of. Maybe like the faux pas that have happened with Final Fantasy for me. Like, just knowing the history of it is like, okay. Nothing, you know, we're humans, you know, humans made this stuff, and especially like when you're going with corporations that are like, you have to do it within this time period, right? You humanized it, which I appreciate.
Oh, thank you. You know, that's actually, you know, one thing I always say is that the development stories behind Final Fantasy games are oftentimes more compelling than even the game itself, because they're always so fascinating about how they put these games together and the constraints they have,
like definitely, like I think next time we'll have to talk about like 13 verses, like in depth, really, you know, like especially now.
Oh that, yeah, yeah.
Now that's gone, and I mean, hopefully we have you on before the next Final Fantasy 7 part comes out, also.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you got like probably 4 years to
there
have
we go.
Me, so sometime in between there.
Mark my words, gonna bring you on before then, right?
Yeah, anytime, man.
But dude, absolutely, it's been a pleasure. Like this was really good talk. You know, being like a big fan, like I've learned a lot more, and it sounds like we're about to make a fan out of Josh, hopefully.
No, I think so.
I mean, I like Final Fantasy.
Okay,
I don't hate
cool.
Shit.
I mean, I don't know ever since One Piece, right? But
that second game was
Final Fantasy 2.
Second game is bad.
Like, 2, yeah. That game is bad. That game is bad.
It was the first. Yeah, Final Fantasy 1, real synopsis, real quick. Final Fantasy 1 was the most bare bones RPG. Before its time, you're like, that's cool. I could be a monk. I could be a thief. Mm. And then I get an upgrade from a thief to a ninja if I want to. You make your party. You go through this gift system. Mm. Collect the crystals. Fight the, you know, titan characters, like the summons. Mm. Then you fight Garland at the end, the main knight. And that's the game. And you're like, that was a fun experience, leveling up and stuff. Final Fantasy 2, they tried to go into story, but they didn't 100% commit to the story. So it's just like, you're like, that's my brother, and that's my sister. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, all right, what else? The game just ends.
Yep.
Like, it's so bare bones. It's like, they just, I don't know, man. 2 was like probably the worst of the initial ones.
We got to bring you back on to talk about that. For sure, because I want to hear about the whole history of Final Fantasy, if possible.
Oh, yeah. No problem.
Something I've been wanting to do for a long time is, like, try to, like, to 100% or at least beat most of the mainline Final Fantasy games. I want to get a tattoo that sort of symbolizes the franchise, but that's something I need to talk to you some more about soon.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to think, like, what would be a good symbol of that. I'll hit you up if
please.
I find it.
Because I was even thinking, like, maybe, like, Ultima Weapon or...
Yeah, I think that would probably be, like, a really good symbol. But, yeah.
I got to talk to you some more about that for sure. But
Roman numerals.
Yeah.
Something. Because I was even thinking, like, a Keyblade or, like, putting in a Keyblade somehow with that. I don't know. But definitely.
Yeah.
We got to bring you back on to talk some more. Excited to have you at the party. I'm excited. Like, more things were going to happen with you. Also, I'm excited for you and your channel. Like, congratulations like, with all your success, and especially, like, this being, like, such a big moment for you.
Yes. Man, dude, right now I'm continuing to make Final Fantasy videos, but also I'm diving into a whole bunch of other series and making videos on pretty much everything that interests me, and they've all been doing well, so I've just been kind of excited to see that my audience cares about what I have to say about stuff other than just Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm at a high point right now.
I'm glad to hear that. I do remember like a fear was like, do you have to stay within that? But I'm really glad that you found your niche and like you're just really being you to the fullest.
Yeah, and it feels good. It feels great, honestly. Like, I love that I can still be who I am. People still care. They didn't just show up for the Final Fantasy. They showed up for me.
Yes.
And that's a good feeling.
Absolutely. I mean, we didn't talk about you a lot during this podcast, but at the same time, I was thinking we were going to talk like more about like you also, but at the same time, I have, unfortunately, I got to go to a meeting in a few minutes. Oh, so that's why. No worries.
No worries, man.
But it was an absolute pleasure having you on. Can you also remind us like where we can find you? We'll be, of course, putting your links like in the page, but where can people find you?
Okay, so you can find me on YouTube, youtube.com/thenightskyprince. I also recommend following me on Twitter. I'm not calling it X. Following me on Twitter at nightskyprince_, because someone took at nightskyprince. It's a blank profile. They should hope I never find them.
Years later, they
should roll up on them. Yeah, I'd be like, why you got that blank profile?
Come like a Tom Berry like them, you know? Just,
you know what?
Who's that guy?
All these social media sites are trying to find something extra to monetize on. Like, here's what you do. Allow me to pay $20. If an ad has not been active for like 5 years, I can pay like $20 and I can take that ad. And people would like love it. And it would end the market on people trying to like steal ads like preemptively.
Yeah.
And then sell them on eBay. It would end that market entirely.
That's what people
That's
do.
All they have to do. Oh. That's all they got to do, man. Yep.
Well, I wonder, because you're going to have that situation where like the comebacks that would be that they would then be like, all right, I just got to get on all these apps, like these specific apps, and just like say something random, like once every month or something.
Yeah.
Be like, hello.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. they start botting you. Yeah, you're
That'd
right.
be hilarious. I have one last question. I am literally trying to buy the game right now. I'm wondering, I haven't played Integrade. Should I get Integrade or should I just get the game? Rebirth.
The twin pack should come with it for free.
Yeah,
if you get the it should be like its own SKU that comes with it for free.
Oh,
if you have not,
I mean, it's not for free. It's either like $70 or $100, right? So it's like,
I thought the twin pack was included.
Nah,
with the pre. Okay,
I'm seeing right now.
What is Integrade?
Integrate. So when they released it on PS4 originally, Integrate is the PS5 version, and basically it's the same game, but it's 60 frames per second, and they improved the visuals. So if you've already played the PS4 version,
I'm good then, right?
You're good. The only thing that I would try to get or that I would try to swing would be the Yuffie.
That's
DLC.
What I was thinking about, like where I'm like, I want to see
actually
the...
wait. Uh-huh. You got the PS4 version,
yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh. So I can
you
upgrade.
You should be able to do a free upgrade.
All right. Okay.
And you can get the Yuffie DLC for like, I think it's like $20. It's kind of pricey, but you can get the Yuffie DLC.
Okay. And it's worth it to do that, right?
I would say so.
Okay, good to know. All right,
yeah.
Shit.
Yeah.
How long does it take, also?
How long does Rebirth take?
Oh, no, the Yuffie DLC thing take.
No, the Yuffie DLC is like 5 to 10 hours,
okay.
Something like that.
I'm going to knock that out. I'll make you proud.
It's not long.
Okay.
You can beat it in one sitting.
All right, good to hear.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Thank you so much, bro. This was an absolute pleasure having you on.
No problem.
Like the wealth of knowledge, and I'm rooting for you and the success of your pages for more. Anything you want to say, Josh?
Appreciate it, man.
I guess I would say I have my own channel now, too, on top of doing the That's Dope stuff. So it's a Mid-Tier Josh. You're going to catch me there. it's on YouTube. We got TikTok going. And it's like a couple of my videos got banned because I'm learning the ways of streaming right now. So learning how to like mirror images so I don't get caught for copyright. But I'm actually downloading Final Fantasy VII, the original, right now. When I get on it, so when you see me next, I'll be a different person.
Oh man.
Good on, Josh.
Please keep me updated on your playthrough, man.
I'm excited.
I want to know about that.
I'm excited.
It's going to be sick. It's going to be cool. Yeah. It looks like I'm already enjoying it because it's been such a long time. Like, I feel like I'm rejuvenated. Like,
you said it's OG also, right?
Yeah, this is OG. It's $11 on Steam or $12.
Yeah, it's real cheap. Yeah.
Dope.
Greatest game of all time, man.
Honestly, I agree. I'm excited to hear how that goes. And, dude, yeah, definitely... Hope to talk to you very soon, especially for the party. So,
let's go.
Yes, sir. And last thing I want to say, come to Final Fantasy Party if you're in Dallas on March 23rd, and come to the Final Fantasy Party in LA on March 30th. We're going to be a dope-ass time. We have live performances, casino games, and a lot of activities that we just started talking about. Prizes, for sure. It's going to be a blast. So,
Tell them about the strippers, guys.
Come to the party and see.
Come to the
party and see. You got the honeybees?
You know, actually we do, but stay tuned.
All right.
Hey, peace, y'all. Thank you so much. As always, stay dope.
Peace.